Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, February 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry and Coin is in the studio today to answer your questions. So if you've recently uncovered some hidden treasures and need some help figuring it all out, give us a call. Number is 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. And again, the number's 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson and your antique questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques on the show today. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry and Coin is here. Mark has been buying, selling, and collecting interesting things since he was a kid. After running a traditional antique shop and opening a gallery on Broadway in Saratoga, Mark was approached by Sotheby's in 2000 to assist organizing and curating single-owner sales. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program in Period American Furniture at the Metropolitan Museum. He is also certified in diamond grading from the Gemological Institute of America, an RPI grad with a degree in materials engineering. Mark travels throughout the region, meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. If you have a treasure you would like to find out about, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or email us if you want to. voxpop@wamc.org is the number, is the address. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson, welcome back.
Yeah, hey, Ray. Great to be here.
Nice crab.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
What is that?
So it's an articulated bronze. They call these the style of Japanese art, Japanese art form is called Jizai Okinomo.
Yeah.
And it's this one is a carefully articulated, realistically modeled sculpture of a crab. Its legs move. It looks very much like a real crab would.
Sure does.
It was all that color.
And now, when was this made?
This one made in the late 19th century, the Meiji era. Yeah. In Japan. These first came into being and became popular in Japan in the early 18th century during a period of peacetime. And all the guys that would normally be making swords and cannons and whatever the heck they needed to fight had time on their hands. And somebody came up with the idea of making something like this. So they do them in lobsters, they do bugs, they do crabs, all sorts of little creatures. And they've always been very popular, and they're beautifully and meticulously crafted, great quality.
Really, it's a beautiful piece of work. How much is something like that worth?
This one of this age would sell, you know, for somewhere around $1,000 today.
Wowzers. All right, I won't touch it then. And then you brought a vase.
Yeah, so this is actually part of a lamp base that was specially ordered from the Steuben Glassworks under the direction of Frederick Carter somewhere in the early 20th century. It has beautiful applied vine decoration in blue aurine over what they described a green jade underlying form. So influenced by Japanese designs. Again, I guess we have a Japanese theme. Japanese designs of the 19th century. Japan opened up to the West in the 1850s and 60s, and the West was generally fascinated with Japanese culture, and much of their decorative motifs started filtering into Western decorative arts of that time.
Hmm. And this, which was the bottom of a lamp.
Yes.
If the whole lamp was there, would that be worth more money?
Maybe. It might be a little more saleable, but this is an exceptional example of the kind of work that Frederick Carter was particularly noted for, which was innovative design, using materials, specifically glass, in creating art glass that nobody had really done before. He started off innovating at a company, Stevens and Williams, in England. He won a prestigious fellowship to go off and study glass that Stevens and Williams wouldn't let him do. 10 years later, an American guy offered him the opportunity to open his own factory, and he said goodbye to England and came over here and made quite a name for himself.
Now, how do you authenticate this and make sure this is not an imitation?
Well, what's nice about the Frederick Carter's body of work at the Steuben Glassworks is it's been, he kept very detailed records, and much of it is cataloged online. I think it's the Frederick Carter Foundation. So you can actually go and look things up. But most of the time with art glass from that period, it's only recognized as authentic if you can find the exact form in the catalog, which comprises all the drawings and records that he kept throughout his career.
Our guest today is Mark Lawson from Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques. The number is 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question about antiques today, let's go to Michael in Pittsfield, Mass. Michael, you're on.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, good. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Well, we'll see by the end of the phone call. So I have a family piece of jewelry that I've had for some time, and I seem to be having problems finding a buyer for it. And I've had an estimate done by a very reputable local jeweler. It's a platinum band. It appears it could have been an engagement band. And it's got 9 circular cut diamonds in it. And the certification that they gave it was GIA, and then I think the diamond color was GH, and it's the purity of the metal is 900 parts per thousand. But I'm trying to figure out how it would go about selling something like this.
So I already sense the problem that you're going into, which is that there can often be a great disparity between what a jewelry store might value a piece of jewelry at and what you might receive in offers or what the market will bear in terms of a liquidation or a ready kind of sale price. We've talked before here about the trend of almost everything that I buy and sell has, you know, collapsed in price over the last 10 to 15 years for demographic reasons.
Platinum and diamonds, though.
Well, sure, absolutely. But what you have to keep in mind in terms of jewelry is the markup can be as much as 600 or 700%.
Right.
Very high markup. And fashions change. The young people can't afford things the way that, you know, maybe people of the same age and circumstances would have been able to in the past. And fashions have changed as well. But that doesn't when you go to a jewelry store to get an evaluation, very often, one, jewelers aren't familiar with estate and antique jewelry. So they'll price something based on their experience of what something similar would sell for in their store. So that's one thing that can crop up. The other thing is that jewelers will shy away from giving a value for something that's not consistent with the values and the prices that on pieces that are in their cases, just because it's inconsistent and raises issues. When you want
sure.
to...
I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the jeweler that I took it to actually specializes in estate jewelry.
Okay.
And appraised it for its insurance replacement value.
Uh-huh.
And that value came in at $1,200. And in their case, they had very similar pieces to this.
Sure.
And so they said they weren't in a situation to purchase it. And they basically wished me luck with it. But I sort of am apprehensive about just approaching small local jewelers. I'd like to find a method of selling this where I get at least, well, I don't know what could be reclaimed of it, you know, but at least some of its value.
So based on what you're describing to me, if you took the breakdown value of the metals and the diamonds in this ring, you might have $100 to $150. My experience is that the liquidation value versus replacement value for a piece of antique jewelry is typically 15 to 25% of what the insurance replacement value is. The more desirable and interesting a piece is, the higher percentage of replacement value you're going to get. You know, the quicker you can sell something, the that's going to help the value. With something like that, now, platinum diamond bands are very nice, assuming the condition is good. You know, I think you might be looking realistically at more like in the $250 or $350 range, okay. which might be around, you know, 20 to 25% of what the replacement value is. Now, the replacement value also is going to take into account the markup in jewelry stores. And the other thing is you wouldn't be able to, it's inconsistent, but you could not manufacture that platinum diamond band for $200 or $300. It would probably cost you $500 or $600 to manufacture it. So a similar thing, brand new in a store, even if they only mark it up, you know, they're starting from a cost that's going to be higher than the market value for what you have.
All right, Michael, we got to take a break here. But you know, really, if you break down platinum and nine diamonds, it's only $100, $150.
Platinum traditionally was worth double the price of gold. Today, it's two-thirds of the price of gold. So platinum prices have dropped significantly. And, you know, the world's a different place.
Mark Lawson is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Antiques Today. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. And Mark Lawson is our guest today from Mark Lawson Antiques. And by the way, if you want to take a look at the picture of the decorative bronze crab and the vase, we have it on our page at WAMC.org/VoxPop. You'll see it right there. It's very interesting. Mark, a couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one came in from Ann. Anne wrote, I found this at an estate sale recently in a stack of assorted textiles. It wasn't until I got home that I realized that it is entirely hand-painted silk, possibly of Indian origin. Now, you've had a look at these pictures.
I did.
I haven't had much luck with research, but it may be a Mughal-era Indian panel. It is approximately 60 inches by 25 inches. If you have any info to share, value, etc., people who might be interested in purchasing it, Anne would like to know.
So it's a beautiful hand-painted textile. It's certainly in the style of the Mughal period, same period as when the Taj Mahal was created, kind of a period that the arts in India reached a very, very high level. Any decorative arts from this period are highly sought after, relatively uncommon, very valuable. In this case, I looked at it. It's a beautiful work of art, but almost certainly from the early to mid 20th century.
Okay,
so it's
still
beautiful.
Nice.
And one of the clues to that is silk. Silk does not age well. It's an organic fiber, and unless it's kept in strictly controlled conditions, it deteriorates very quickly.
Okay.
So a strike against it, you know, potentially surviving for this long. But still, it's a beautiful piece.
Fair enough. This one is from Brandon in Canajoharie. Subject heading, 1920s wool baseball uniform. I have a full high school uniform, including leather cleats with dirt from playing, still dried on them. Is it worth anything?
Oh, absolutely. Any kind of sporting memorabilia is collected, you know, And the older it is, the less common it is, the more desirable it is. Back into the period in the 1920s, even though it's not, you know, if it was a Major League Baseball uniform, it would be worth tens of thousands of dollars, depending on its specific history.
Right.
But still, in this case, you know, it's a great piece of memorabilia, could make a great, a really nice framed display. I would just say the best thing to do is collect and keep with the baseball uniform as much historical information about its origin, the school that it came from, the record of the teams, all that sort of stuff, which will only enhance its value.
Very good. Back to the phones we go at 1-800-348-2551. Pam in Cherry Valley. Hello, Pam.
Hi there. Good
afternoon. Pam.
I have an Albrecht Dürer print of Thomas More that has been in our family for at least 80 or 90 years, and it has that little signature portrait that he's famous for.
Mm-hmm.
No other markings on it, no indication that it's one of a series. And I was just curious if I should even investigate its value.
Oh, absolutely, you should. Now, the prints by Dürer have been, he was one of the first great printmakers in the 15th and 16th century. Versions of his prints that were created during his lifetime are the most valuable, and the rare or exceptional examples of his work sell for very, very good prices. But he was very popular, and his works have been reproduced continually from the time he was around, you know, through probably the early to mid 20th century. Very often, or in some cases, from the original plates that may still exist. I think the Louvre has some, and has in the past, you know, done, you know, kind of official reprints that they carefully mark. So it's something that an expert needs to do for you. The paper the paper and the quality of the impression are usually the things that somebody familiar with them will base an opinion on. But yeah, absolutely. You certainly should investigate it. If it's authentic from the period that he was working, it could be worth, you know, at least $1,000, maybe more. And it's also, you may enjoy the process too. It's kind of fun, like a little bit of a treasure hunt.
Yeah. Any suggestions on where I might take it?
If you wanted to email images of it, I would be happy to refer you. The Albany Institute of History and Art is very good. If you just wanted a opinion about authenticity, you might also consider just taking a drive up to the Hyde Collection one day.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, because they have more experience in, you know, old master works, I think, for all of the museums locally.
All right, Pam, thanks a lot for the call. You ever go over to Scotia, New York?
Sure, yeah. My wife came from Scotia.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, my in-laws came from Scotia, and my wife and I were having dinner at the Turf Tavern on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever
been?
Good
restaurant, yeah.
You know that,
more than once.
Do you know that? Me too. You know that huge wall-size painting of the Scotia Bridge? It's in the front room of the Turf Tavern.
Vaguely, yeah.
And it's old. And mm-hmm. I don't know how old it is, but I've been trying to figure it out. I looked at it for an hour and a half on Friday night trying to figure it out. It's a beautiful piece of old Americana.
Is the bridge a steel structure or a wooden structure?
No, it's a covered bridge.
Oh, an old covered bridge.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
you should check that out next time you go.
I will. It sounds like a nice... It all depends on, you know, the details.
It's enormous. It's entirely the size of the wall. So you got to check it out. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And let's go now to Rob and Troy. Rob.
Hi.
Hey, Rob.
This is actually not what I was originally calling you about, but you got me a little bit worried because I have an Obie that I think is made of silk, and it's mm-hmm. just in a drawer at home, and I wonder if I should take it out and inspect it. But
you could. You want to protect it from moths and from moisture and from extremes of temperature and direct sunlight.
Okay. Okay, well, it's protected from all of those. So that's, cool. That's all right. Good.
That's a good start.
Yeah, but what I'm calling about, my grandfather was stationed in China, World War One era, and brought back a number of different pieces.
Nice.
And I have a statuette that's white, and I think it might be Chinese. And it reminds me of Scrimshaw in that the hair and the pupils of the eyes are black ink in size. But if it's ivory, is it something that can be sold in
Suppose there are some states of the union where it's technically legal. I don't know how legal it would be to transport it to those states. In the state of New York, as the law stands right now, which they changed in 2015, the only way for you to transfer ownership in it legally is by gifting it to a relative.
I see. Okay. Now, the other thing that I have, but I don't have them in my possession, they're actually in New Hampshire, are two walrus tusks that were collected by a great uncle of mine who was stationed in Alaska in probably 1904, because I have a mastodon tusk slice that is dated 1904. Hmm. And is there a prohibition against selling?
I'm not sure. There may be. The best New York State resource is the website of, I believe it's the New York State Department of Fisheries and Wildlife, which may be a division of the Bureau of Environmental Conservation. Mm-hmm. They have a page that lists all the different type of endangered species that products of which are the sale of products of which are restricted by law. Some you can apply for permits. Some you can sell under certain conditions with certain permissions that you might have to apply to. Some are outright banned. But that's a great resource. So walrus, I'm not 100% sure of off the top of my head.
All right, Rob, thank you very much. The number here is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest today on Vox Pop. And Edward in Springfield, Massachusetts. Edward.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have seven $5, what I assume are Confederate States of America bills, and I'm wondering what the value of those might be.
It's hard to say without seeing the specific one. If they're authentic, they can be, you know, depending on their condition, they can be worth anywhere from $5 to $10 to $20 or $30 typically. What you have to be careful of, I see a lot of Confederate currency that's brought into me that are later reprints. One of the most common type I see is the ones that were created on a very crinkly, yellow, kind of parchmenty-looking paper, which I believe are still sold today in the souvenir shops like at Colonial Williamsburg or the Gettysburg Battlefield. Mm. But those are very easy to spot. What a hallmark of authentic ones is they were printed on rag paper, so the authentic ones tend to be very soft and supple.
Yeah.
If they're hard or crisp or have some stiffness to them, it's less likely that they're authentic.
Yeah, these are very thin and very soft, and they came in a collection of letters and contracts and documents of a relative that lived in the South at the time.
Mm-hmm. Nice. They could be authentic.
Yeah, I think they probably are. Okay, good to know. And I can just take these to somebody and get them appraised, I guess?
Absolutely.
Mm. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Number's 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques is here to answer your questions today. And let's go on over to Troy. And Linda, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Oh, good. So you can hear me fine.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just calling. I have a little piece of a tabletop sculpture. It's probably 10 inches high. And it's by the artist Leo Amino. It's dated, I believe, 1941. It's one of his little plastic orbs. It's kind of translucent. And I have no idea what it's worth. But I keep getting, you know, I put a picture of it on Instagram once on my page. And as a consequence, I keep getting, you know, messages from this guy who works for the Gagosian Gallery. Apparently, mm-hmm. they're handling the estate. And also, they his widow and his grandson actually came up to Troy from the city to wow. look at the piece. And they asked me if I would give it to them.
Oh,
so
well,
I don't know. I mean...
Well, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist to tell you it might have some value.
Yeah, I think so.
The let's see. Yeah, his work, well, mid-century modern decorative arts of all types are quite hot now, very popular, and better quality examples of art and design from this period by noteworthy artists bring premium prices. I think works, well, about what size is it?
It's small, maybe 10 inches tall.
Oh, that's actually pretty good size.
Yeah, and I keep looking online, but I can't find any current auction prices. Everything's, you know, like from the 70s that I see online.
Gotcha. I think for generally for works of art by that artist, I think minimum it's going to be worth several thousand dollars.
Wow.
And it could be worth, you know, it could easily be worth in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. Some of his works go for much more than that. So certainly something that deserves some careful evaluation. And
don't give it away.
Yeah, don't give it away. But do your research, do your due diligence, and make sure you know what you have before you make a decision about what to do with it.
Wow.
Thanks. Yeah, I really like the piece, but, you know, everybody's got their price.
I hear you.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yes.
If it was me, I would take it off my Instagram right away. That's for sure.
you think so?
Well, you never know who come knocking.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling in.
800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And we go to Lynn in Lenox. Lynn.
Hi.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, so I have a question. This isn't anything I own, but this is what a friend of mine has. I was at her house one day, and her mom was the longtime housekeeper for Norman Rockwell in Stockbridge.
Ah.
And what he would do is, if she was coming in and he wouldn't be there, he would write a note about what he wanted cleaned or a project done. And with every single note, he did a drawing.
Oh.
And she kept every one of them. And my friend says she doesn't think it's worth anything. And I said, I think it is worth something. And I just don't know how to go about to find out what this box of original drawings from Norman Rockwell would be.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Wow from both of us. The safe to say they're going to have conservatively very good value. Norman Rockwell's American icon. His works continue to set record prices. Certainly something that, well, I've done numerous evaluations of Rockwell works over the years. Little drawings, you know.
With handwritten notes?
Yeah, no, with handwritten notes too.
They're all dated. I mean, she's got pictures of her with, you know, they were very good friends. You know, she worked for him for years and years and years. So the notes are pretty personal, you know, nice and personal, like beautiful day, you know, hope your daughter's doing well at college and things
wow,
like that. And then
wow.
he would draw these, you know, funny little Norman Rockwell drawings.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad you called in. You can tell your friend that they're going to be worth minimum $500 to $1,000 each, And all of those little, you know, the little notes, depending on the subject and the character of the personal note that he's attached, you know, this gives a window into the personality and yeah. life and circumstances of an artist. I mean, they could be worth much, much, much more than that each.
Wow.
So your friend is potentially looking at a very great deal of value there. And not only that, you know, as an American icon, as an artist of the stature that he is, the way he depicted, you know, American life in the 20th century, you know, it's an important historical document. You know, they have importance on many levels, which is part of why they're going to be worth as much as they are.
So how would she find out?
I'm so glad I'm
right and she was wrong.
If you want to email images, I'd be happy to steer you in a direction. Again, the okay. local places that the Albany Institute could help you.
What about the Norman Rockwell Museum? Would they be interested in that?
The Ray, you beat me to the punch. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they would be interested. They certainly would be interested in seeing them and knowing of them and certainly being able to catalog them and add them to, you know, the body of knowledge of his work. The typically nonprofits don't, if your friend is interested in selling, the nonprofits typically are more interested in a donation, although for important things, they are known to find donors to underwrite purchases of things that they really want.
But there are a lot of private collectors okay. out
oh,
there.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Oh, yeah? Yes. He's an important American artist.
All right, Lynn, we have to take a break, but congratulations. Boy, I tell you, Mark Lawson, you're making people happy today. Good for
Whoa.
You. Usually that doesn't happen on
that's
that show.
Crazy. That's crazy.
I know.
That's, I mean.
Right? 800-348.
She could have a $100,000
box. Wow.
Stuff, you know?
Well, let's take a break. +1 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's Antiques Today on the program. Mark Lawson is our guest. 1-800-348-2551. Jackie Orchard just brought in her phone with pictures from another email, which we'll get to in a moment. All right, you got that cataloged?
I think so.
All right, before we get to that, you have a couple of events coming up.
Yes, we're. I have a big estate sale March 26th, 27th, and 28th. Giant collection of Stu Benn, giant collection of Victorian art glass, more Saratoga memorabilia, art glass, a really great selection of wonderful things, which will be sold till they're gone on that weekend. And then we have, in the fall, we did one of these events, and they asked us back in April. We're doing one of our Trash or Treasure presentations at SUNY Adirondack on Thursday, April 23rd.
Yeah.
This is a popular event that I've been doing for years where people bring in items. We line them up across the front of the room, and I get up, talk a little bit about the antiques business, and then I go down the table talking about each item, its value,
nice.
History, et cetera, answer any questions. And people love it. It's very popular.
So
I enjoy it, too.
Stuff in.
What's that?
People bring their own stuff in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they bring their own things in, and we talk about them.
You ever knock one over by mistake?
Almost.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness. I scared the living daylights out of myself a couple of times.
All right. By the way, we got an email here from Dave.
Wait, I shouldn't have said that on the air.
What? No, you're all right.
I'm going to drop her. Oh, she's leaving that priceless thing at home now.
Subject heading, Turf Tavern Mural Info. And Dave writes, Arthur Olson painted that mural. He had a sign shop on Eagle Street, also made Turf's signs at the time. His family purchased the Glenn Sanders Mansion in the early 70s, stabilized it, opened an antique gallery there. Art's family is still around. Son Richard runs a sign shop out near the end of Vly Road Extension. How about that?
Very cool.
Now I know. This one is from Elizabeth. Is old silver 1910 to 1915 worth more than later silver stamped sterling? Sterling, I should say. Sterling would be interesting.
If it's not sterling, it's going to be worth much less. All of it, earlier or later, if it's unexceptional, is pretty much today, it's just going to be worth the silver value.
How do you know it's exceptional?
Because it looks, well, a lot of times exceptional things look really cool and exceptional. Sometimes you don't know. That's where you need somebody that knows to look at it and let you know.
Okay, this one is from Wendy. I inherited a round 18-inch in diameter wooden side table inlaid, possibly with ivory, with a wonderfully detailed scene of about 8 adult and baby elephants. I know I can't sell it, but I'd like to know if it really is ivory and what it's worth. Who does this kind of assessment? That's from Wendy.
Anybody, any professional in the antiques business will be able to help you with that. I know that the it may not be as unsaleable as you think. After they passed the new ivory law in 2015, and shortly thereafter, a professional orchestra was returning to the United States, and the musicians had some very valuable instruments that had some ivory inlay that were confiscated from them at the by customs,
right?
Because they had ivory in them. So they, which was obviously a problem, they modified the law so anything that has by volume less than 20% of elephant ivory in it can have an exception placed on its sale.
Okay. This one is from Rosemarie, and then we'll get back to the phones. The single tile, which you saw the pictures of,
yes,
was among family treasures. Measures about 6x6. Is it of any value?
Yeah, it's still a collectible.
What was it? I didn't see that.
It's a pottery tile from the Minton Pottery Works in England. They did wonderful Victorian art pottery of all types. Mm-hmm. Probably not worth quite as much today as it used to be worth, but it's still a very colorful, a beautiful, probably 1880s or 90s design.
Yeah.
The sort of thing that might sell online today for, $20 to $40 maybe.
Okay. Back to the phones, and we go to Jerry in Chatham. Jerry, you're on with Mark Lawson.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have some dishes and dishware sets, serving sets, bowls, plates, over 100 items, maybe up to 100 years old. Couple questions. A couple. There's a Windsor and an Ansley cup. Are they anything special? And more generally, what's the market for this kind of dishware stuff? And suggestions for selling would be good.
Well, the cup, the type of porcelain you describe, is beautiful quality. Unfortunately, it was made in great quantity. And because lifestyles have changed and nobody uses this type of thing anymore, the values have collapsed. Very difficult to sell unless there's, you know, it's exceptional in terms of its, you know, exceptional and in a way that creates a market for it, which means really exceptional. Sells for very, very little anymore. There's so much more of this material available than there's any demand for. Very often, I refer people to, you know, I say, oh, you could try selling it at an estate sale, or, you know, it's a donation kind of item. You can consult with professionals near you. The website online, replacements.com, which is the website for the largest reseller of china and glassware, you can at least identify some of the patterns. You can call their purchasing department. It's 1-800-REPLACE, and they'll tell you if it's a pattern or a type that they're purchasing and how much they would pay. And that'll give you an idea, too, of the potential value. But it's almost certainly going to be disappointing, and I'm very sorry to have to tell you that.
Oh, sorry, Jerry. The number is 800-348-2551. Pete in Albany. Pete, you're on with Mark Lawson.
Good afternoon, guys. I was originally going to ask about my Rolls razor I just bought recently, but I'll just talk about the silk. I have a 19th century silk kimono. It's big. It's like, it fits me. It's beautiful. It's black with orange orange, black and orange, and it's amazing. It's hanging on my wall. It's been there for decades. It looks good. There's no, it doesn't appear to be any damage at all.
Nice.
Is there anything I should be doing with it?
Just, again, extremes of temperature, not too dry, not too moist, you know, extremes of humidity. Don't keep it out of direct sunlight, and it should stay pretty well. You can go one step further and get it, you know, specially framed where they, you know, evacuate the oxygen and flood it with nitrogen and all that sort of thing. But that may be a little more than you need.
I'm not going to be doing that. I originally called to ask about my Rolls Razor. You know the Rolls Razor?
I do. I think today you might mass-produced. I sold lots of them, more so back when I had a traditional antique shop 25 years ago. Uh-huh. I think today they might sell on a place like eBay for $5 to $15 or $10 to $20 each.
What is a Rolls Razor?
Right.
It's this fancy shaving contraption,
right,
from the 1920s.
Safety razor?
You sharpen it yourself. No, it's not a safety razor.
It's a straight razor?
No, it's not a straight razor. You move this thing back and forth, and it sharpens the blade.
Oh, I'll be darned. Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, it's got a strop on one side and a stone on the other side. They're really cool.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Neat mechanical devices.
Pete, thanks a lot for the call. Now let's jump over to Kingston and Tom. Tom, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Tom.
I've got Neil Armstrong. Hello, can you hear me?
Hello.
I can.
Yes, I've got Neil Armstrong's autograph, and I was wondering if I could get a value on it, or if I decided to sell it, where I would go to do that.
Part of the Apollo 11 crew, historical figure. I'm pretty sure he died, didn't he?
I think he did.
Yeah, he did. He was the first human being to set foot on the moon.
Did he sign it on the moon by any chance, Tom? No. All right. Yeah, that would have increased the value.
We were partying on the moon, and no, he didn't. Actually, he signed it in Worcester, Massachusetts.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I've had his autograph before, and it's on a photo or just a piece of paper?
Paper. Yeah, we were at a party in a hotel in Worcester, and it was just signed to me, to Tom, Neil Armstrong, on a pad, you know, that was sitting on the desk from the hotel pad. So it's got the logo of, like, Holiday Inn or something on the top of it, and that's it.
So generally with these types of autographs, particularly 20th century historic figures, the value derives from how nice of a display piece, in part, how nice of a display piece can be made of it. Signed photos are typically much more desirable and sought after. With just a signed piece of paper, I think it's going to be, you know, I don't know, $50 to $100. Say $50 to $150 would be my best guesstimate. Could it be worth a little bit more than that to somebody that really wants it? Absolutely. But I will say, with any kind of historical memorabilia, the more information you can put down about where you got it, when you got it, the circumstances that you got it under, how Neil appeared to you in person, what he was like, the more interesting information that adds to this and enhances the story you can put with it, the higher the potential value is going to be.
All right, Tom, thanks so much. We go to Rich in Newburgh. Rich.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, Rich.
Hi. About 25 years ago, I inherited a unique set of crystal stemware made by Baccarat and signed by Baccarat. There are about 20 pieces. The person from whom I inherited it told me that they received it from an antique dealer on Madison Avenue, and it was part of his personal collection. So I guess it was, you know, quite unique and valuable.
Mm-hmm.
When I received it, stowed it away, put it in a closet, and I haven't touched it. Now that I'm retired, I'm thinking of disposing of it. And I have two questions. Number one, this stemware, the previous owner contacted Baccarat and the factory and was told that it was these are not production pieces. Instead, they were made, they're unique, and they were made by an artist who worked for the company. They're sort of Art Deco in style.
Nice.
They're clear crystal. In the middle of the stem is a horizontal button or circle that's in the shape of a six-sided star, and it's horizontal.
Mm-hmm.
And the
interesting
part that holds the liquid is above it, and the base is below it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have about 20 pieces. So because it was made uniquely by one of their artists and still signed, does it have more value than a production piece?
Potentially. Potentially. Now, all as I said to a caller a couple of calls ago, the market for crystal stemware has generally collapsed. Although fine quality stemware, like, you know, by older stemware by a company, Baccarat, is going to retain some value. I did some research recently on a collection for a client, and I came up with, you know, a value range of $20 to $40 a piece. Now, this was Baccarat glassware from the 1920s, probably. I think, from what you're describing, I think your pieces should fall in that same price range. If complete sets of 8 or 12 is going to enhance it. And also how exceptional the design is, which it sounds like it could be very nice, and whether the artist who designed these pieces is well known, that could also enhance the value. So I think you have nothing but upside potential with all the factors that you're describing to me.
All right, Rich, thank you and good luck. Quickly over to George in Swanton, Vermont. George, go ahead.
Hi. I have a painting that was done underwater at the Rose Island at a Rose Island reef in 1933 by an artist, Chris E. H. Olson.
Wow!
And it was on display in New York. The thing is about 2x3.
Presumably, he didn't use watercolor.
Painted underwater.
No, as a matter of fact, because 1933, I think they were still using the steel bell helmets, weren't they?
Sure.
That's amazing.
Sure. So, what's it a picture of?
It's a picture of a reef, and then there's fish out in the front, and starfish, and some other, you know, underwater creatures.
Wow.
The next one, and it's got a metal thing on the back of the picture that gives all the details.
What's the name of the artist?
Chris E. H. Olson, O-L-S-E-N.
All right, we only have about 30 seconds.
Yep.
Here.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him off the top of my head. It sounds like something potentially of value, even if he's not a listed artist, because of the time period, the age, is it a beautiful picture? Is it highly detailed and pleasing to the eye?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed it.
So it's going to have at least some good decorative value, and if the artists or circumstances or venue that it was made in is special, that will enhance the value.
Well, thank you. That's where we will have to leave it today. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years, QFCC.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, dedicated to aesthetic medicine and cosmetic plastic surgery, including Cool Sculpting, Mommy Makeover, Regenerative Skin Treatment, and Facial Rejuvenation. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. Pelham Auto Service, Route 9 at the Amherst-Belchertown line at the sign of the Flying Pig. Worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. And Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, with a focus on academics, music, art, and movement, and a curriculum designed for creative thought, discourse, human connections, and experiential learning, waldorfsaratoga.org to learn more. Well, thanks to Albany's Mark Lawson, from Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry and Coin. Thank you for being here, sir. You'll be back again. Sorry to everybody we left on the line, and there were a lot of you. He will be back, and we'll do it again soon.
And we'll be crafting a blog post.
Oh, and you'll have a blog post. Okay.
With show notes and details.
Tremendous. Well, thank you for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, Ed Rosen for answering the phones. Tomorrow, it's the Science Forum. Right now, stand by for 51%.